Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Live Through Jesus podcast with Courtney Gilmore. On this episode, where do you place your faith? This is 1 Samuel 14. So, have you as a parent ever told your kids that they can't do something and even told them what would happen if they didn't do it and then immediately regretted it? It's like, I didn't think that through, really. I don't even know why I said to stop that. And now I'm going to have to enforce this rule. Or, yeah, I did not want them to do that. So it was okay for me to tell them no, but that is way too harsh for that, you know, thing that I asked them not to do. And now I'm going to have to either go through with this punishment or I'm going to have to go back on it, which is something you really don't ever want to do as a parent, right? Because you know then that your kids think they can negotiate with you. And so when you speak without thinking, then you face the chance that you may end up having to go back on the thing that you said, or you have to follow through with something that you never even should have said in the first place. I've been in that situation before and it's no fun. And so I pretty quickly realized I don't like that situation and I really need to think through everything that I tell the kids to do and not to do because I don't want to be in a situation where I wish I never would have said it and now I have to decide whether I can go back on it or not. And I also don't want to be too harsh in my punishment because if they do disobey me, then I'm going to actually have to go through with that. And it's not something I want. It's not something they want. And so if you've ever been in that situation, you can kind of relate to some of what Saul has done today, although hopefully you aren't, you know, exactly like him. And so today we're going to look at a battle that happened between the Israelites and the Philistines. And specifically, we're going to be looking at the way that Saul handles this battle and the way that his son handles this battle. And so as we go through this story, be thinking about that. And then at the end, we're going to talk about, you know, which one of these type of people we would prefer to be like and what the Bible says about it. And so if you remember last week, Jonathan had defeated the Philistines, just one little garrison of the Philistines, and now the whole nation has come out against them. But so far, all they've done is just raid a couple of cities. And so Saul is waiting in Gibeah with about 600 men, trying to, you know, see what the Philistines are about to do. And one of these men that he is waiting with is Ahijah, which is Eli's great-grandson, and that is one of Phinehas's sons that he had before he died in the battle. Remember, he was one of Eli's sons that wasn't obeying God, and he died in the battle, and his wife actually died in childbirth when she found out about all of the things that had happened. But this is not the son that she died in childbirth with. This is a son that they had had previously. This is that son's son. So anyway, this man is the priest, and he's there waiting with Saul. And then Jonathan apparently gets sick of waiting. He's like, I have no idea why we continue to sit here and wait on, you know, the Philistines to make the first move. And so he sets out with just his armor bearer. And he tells his armor bearer, I want you to hear what exactly it is that he says to him. This is 1 Samuel verse 6. He says, come, let us go over to the garrisons of these uncircumcised men. And it may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few. And so what he's saying here is that no matter how many men they encounter, he knows that God can help them. And so he goes out with with just his armor bearer, and he says, here's what we're going to do. There are two cliffs. I think I explained this last week, that they're on one hill and the Philistines are on another hill. And so there's two rocky, steep rocky mountains or cliffs that they have to go down and then go back up to get to the Philistine garrison. And so what he's going to do is he said, we're going to climb down and then back up towards their garrison. And if they mistake us for defectors and they call us up to them, we will know that God is giving us the opportunity to kill them and that he's going to fight for us. But if they are like, excuse me, I don't know what you're doing. Hang on, I'll be right down. Then they're like, okay, that means God is not wanting us to fight with these people today. And we'll just talk with them and then go on back home. And so the armor bearer says, sounds like a plan to me. Let's go. And so they set out on their way to the garrison. And as they're climbing up, the Philistines see them. And while they are climbing up, this is what the Philistines say about them. This is verse 11. Look, Hebrews are coming out of their holes where they have hidden themselves. And so they do think that they have, you know, decided that they're not going to win. And so they say, you know, look at them. They've decided they're not winning and they're defecting towards our side. And so they invite them up. And so Jonathan and his armor bearer go up, and it says they kill about 20 men in the amount of space that it would take two oxen to plow in the morning. So they're just giving us a roundabout area that there were about 20 men, and they killed those men. Well, after this, obviously, the Philistines are in a panic. And Saul has some watchmen that have been paying attention to the Philistines so that they would know whether the Philistines were, you know, coming out to attack them. And these watchmen saw that the Philistines are like scattering everywhere and there's complete chaos. And so they go back to Saul and they report to him. He's about 4 miles away, and they report to him and they say, hey, you know, they're in chaos. I don't know exactly what's going on, but something's happening down there. At this time, Saul realizes that Jonathan and his armor bearer are gone and he doesn't know what to do. And so he goes to Ahijah and he says, hey, I want you to go and get either the ark or the ephod. There is discrepancies in the different Bible versions as to whether he was asking for the ark or the ephod. Now, I'll give you both sides of this. The word seems to fit ark better, and so a lot of versions have that. But the ark, the last time we heard about the ark is when the Philistines brought it back to them. And remember, some of the people treated it badly and got killed, and then they were scared of it. And so they sent it to a man's house and in a specific town. And that, as far as we know, is where it has sat the entire time. Until later, when we hear that David brings it from that man's house in that town, and he says, because we never called on it in the days of Saul. And so it doesn't really make sense, even though the word makes more sense to be the ark. It doesn't make sense that they would call for the ark, because David himself says that they didn't call for it in the days of Saul, and that he took it from the house of this man, and that it wasn't Saul who took it from this man's house. And so I believe that it was the ephod. It makes the most sense, because this is the piece of clothing that the priest would wear that had the Urim and the Thummim in it. And these were the things that the people would cast out to show God's will on certain things. And so it would make sense that he would say, hey, I need the Urim and the Thummim to see what God wants me to do about all of this chaos that I'm seeing with the Philistines. And so whatever it was, Saul is paying attention to all of this chaos, and he realizes, you know what? I don't even want that. Obviously, we need to go fight these people. Like, they're already, you know, self-destructing. But before they go out to battle, Saul tells them, hey, I don't want you to eat any food until we win this in the evening. And so everyone was forbidden from eating any food. Well, then they went out to battle, and they see how the Philistines are killing themselves. They're in such confusion. And so they fight with them. In the midst of this fight, Jonathan, who didn't hear his dad's command because he's already been fighting this battle, reaches out and dips his staff in a hive of honey that is so full it's dripping onto the ground. And he gets a bite of honey. And one of the soldiers is like, oh, no, your dad told us that we couldn't do that. You shouldn't have done that. And Jonathan's like, okay, well, I didn't know this rule. And also, that doesn't make a lot of sense because look how much more energy I have than the rest of y'all because I ate this honey. And maybe y'all would, you know, be able to defeat these people a little bit easier if you hadn't been, you know, kept from eating all this day while you're fighting. So he's like, I don't know what the point of that is, but okay, whatever. And so then we hear that the people do fight the Philistines and they win. They push them 18 miles all the way to their own coastal plains. And then after that, the people are so starving that they kill sheep and oxen and calves, but they don't wait to drain their blood like God told them to do. God said in Leviticus 17:10-14, he said, if any one of the house of Israel or of the strangers who sojourn among you eats any blood, I will set my face against that person who eats blood and I will cut him off from among his people. For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I've given it for you on the altar to make atonement for your souls. For it is the blood that makes atonement by the life. Therefore, I've said to the people of Israel, no person among you shall eat the blood, neither shall any stranger who sojourns among you eat the blood. Anyone also of the people of Israel or of the strangers who sojourn among them, who takes in hunting any beast or bird that may be eaten, must pour out its blood and cover it with the earth. The life of every creature is in the blood. Its blood is its life. Therefore, I've said to the people of Israel, you shall not eat the blood of any creature, for the life of any creature is in its blood. And so he's saying, you're not supposed to eat this. As a matter of fact, this is what gives atonement for your souls. And so if you eat this, then there is no atonement made. And I treat life as very precious. And so you can't just kill this animal and, you know, treat it as if it's not important. Treat the blood of the animal as if it's not important. And even when you do pour their blood out on the ground, you have to cover it with the earth because it's precious. And so, but the people didn't do that, right? And the reason the people didn't do that is because they were so starving because of Saul's order. And so it seems that Jonathan was right. And so when Saul finds out that the people have, you know, decided to do this, that they're not doing what God said, he says, hey, bring me a big stone and then I'll tell all the people to bring their animals to me and we'll slaughter them properly and lay them on this stone and let the blood drain. And then Saul built an altar there to God and sacrificed all of their animals on this altar. And so after the people have done what Saul said, and he's built this altar, which, by the way, they say this is the only time that we hear about Saul building an altar to the Lord. After they've done this, then Saul decides, just kind of on a whim, he's like, you know what? Let's just go down there and raid these people in the middle of the night and we'll just plunder them. And Ahijah is like, that might not be the greatest idea. Let's not do that right now. Maybe you should talk to God first. And so Saul's like, all right, fine. Let's ask God what he thinks I should do. And God doesn't answer him. And when God doesn't answer him, then this lets Saul know somehow that somebody sinned. And so he says, okay, I want the Urim and the Thummim. And then he divides the people up on one side and him and Jonathan on the other side. And he says, whoever it is that I find out that is sinned, I'm going to kill that person. And he said, even if it's my own son. And then he tells God, let the Urim fall on the side of the people that have done this and let the Thummim fall on the side of the people that you want to let go. And then he casts the lots and the Urim falls on him and Jonathan. And so he lets the people go and then he casts it again and he sees that Jonathan is the one that has sinned. And so he asks his son, he's like, what did you do? And Jonathan's like, well, I ate some honey. I didn't know your rule. But I guess now I have to die because now you've made this promise. And Saul's like, yeah, I did. And so I guess you have to die. And this is absurd, obviously. This is the scenario I was telling you about with my kids, but like to the umpteenth power, right? Because he's willing to kill his son because he can't go back on, first of all, the stupid command that he gave in the first place, and second of all, the very harsh punishment that he gave for someone breaking that command. And so he's willing to do this, and the people are like, yeah, no way. And so in verse 45, it says the people say, shall Jonathan die, who has worked this great salvation in Israel? Far from it. As the Lord lives, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he has worked with God this day. And so the people prevented Saul from killing the person that had just saved all of their lives by saying, hey, you know, he's the one that's been doing what God wanted him to do. And so, no, you're not going to kill him. I'm sorry you made this vow, but we're not letting you do that to him. He's not a criminal. He's a hero, you know. And so Saul's like, fine, I won't kill him. Also, I'm not even thinking about going into the Philistines tonight. Let's just forget the whole thing. Like, fine, everything's done. And so Jonathan climbed up the cliff of the Philistine garrison with only his armor bearer, not knowing how many men he was going to meet at the top, because he trusted that however many there were, God was going to bring him victory, right? He's like, it doesn't matter how many men are up there, because however many there are, God can help us defeat them if he so chooses. And also, it doesn't even matter how many men that I bring with me, even though there's only two of us. If there's a ton of them, it doesn't matter. And so he doesn't worry about the number of them or the number that he brings with him, because he's solely relying on God for this victory. It doesn't depend on him having this great army or great strength, and it doesn't depend on them having great army or great strength. And so then he demonstrates this faith that he has in God by how he approaches this battle in the first place, right? He is neither passive nor reckless. He doesn't just sit around and wait on God to tell him, you know, beat him over the head with it and say, hey, I want y'all to go to battle. But he also isn't reckless about it. He doesn't say, you know, I'm just going to definitely go and fight this battle, and I'm just going to make God, you know, do what I want him to do. He says, no, I think this is what I should do, but I'm going to set out. And if God wants me to do it, he's going to give me the opportunity to get up there without them suspecting anything, so that they don't feel threatened and they aren't coming out against me immediately. And if God doesn't want me to do this, then I trust that he's going to send those people down, and that will let me know I wasn't supposed to do this, and I'll go back home. But I'm not just going to sit around and do nothing, you know, not going to be passive. I'm just going to go out ready to fight this battle and then watch for God to guide me, see what he wants me to do. Saul, complete opposite, right? He's just sitting around waiting on apparently them to do something so that he can then react to it, right? And then when they do something, he doesn't know what to do. And he does initially call on God, but then he's like, oh, never mind, forget it. It makes perfect sense. Obviously, I need to go fight them. And so he rushes into this battle, though not before he hands down this arbitrary command to his soldiers. And so Saul is not relying on God at all in this battle, right? It seems that he's relying on some silly notion that if they just refrain from everything and, you know, make sure that they're just totally focused on this mission of defeating the Philistines, then God will give them victory or something silly like that. And God does bring them victory, but it's not because of Saul, right? It's because of Jonathan, and even the people acknowledge that later. And so I want to stop right here and read you a verse that would have probably been helpful to Saul had he had it. This is Isaiah 58:3. And it says, the people are talking to God and they're saying, why have we fasted and you don't see it? Why have we humbled ourselves and you don't acknowledge it? And then God says, behold, in the day of your fast, you seek your own pleasure and you oppress all of your workers. And then down in verse 6, God says, this is the fast that I choose. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? Then shall your light break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily. Your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and God will say, "Here I am." If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the fingers and the speaking wickedness, if you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness, and your gloom will be as the noonday. The Lord will guide you continuously and satisfy your desire in the scorched places and make the bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. And so what Isaiah was telling the Israelites and what Saul needed to know is that fasting doesn't prove anything to God. You know, you can't just say, okay, I'm going to fast and then you've got to bring me victory. God's like, that, yeah, I'm not acknowledging that because that's not what I want. What I want is for you to be devoted to me. I want for you to look to me. I want for your fasting to be out of your own heart and not so you can get something from me. And then if you are doing the right things because they're the things that I want you to do, then I will bring you righteousness. Then I will direct your paths. Then you will be satisfied. That is when God will guide your way and make it straight, right? And so that's what Saul should have done, but he did not. And then also, even after he's pushed the Philistines back into their own territory and their troops are all gathered, he decides he just on a whim wants to ambush them by night. And if it wouldn't have been for the priest who was like, hey, wait a minute, then he would have done that, right? He would have rushed into both battles without talking to God at all about it. And so he should have just trusted God and done what God told him to do instead of relying on some, you know, stupid command that he gave to his soldiers to win. And, you know, God did bring them victory, but it wasn't because of this. As a matter of fact, because of his command, his soldiers were weary and it was a difficult battle for them. And they also broke God's command with the blood of the animals, all because of the stupid command that he gave them. And then that coupled with the rash, you know, promise that he made that somebody was going to die that broke that, then he almost lost his son. And so all of this because Saul was, you know, impulsive. And then also, even after they had pushed the Philistines back into their territory and his troops were all gathered, he just has this crazy idea that he's going to go back and ambush the Philistines. And he would have done it if the priest wouldn't have stopped him. And so both times he would have impulsively rushed into battle without asking God at all. And he would have gotten himself into all of this mess, if not for the people and for God and for his son, Jonathan. And so Saul didn't demonstrate any faith in God at all, whereas Jonathan set out blindly trusting that God was going to take care of him every single step of the way, right? And the results of each one's decisions is evident. When the people stopped Saul from carrying out his, you know, impulsive vow, they recognized that Jonathan is the one that was cooperating with God, not Saul. He was the one that God was working through. And so if it wouldn't have been for Jonathan in conjunction with the Lord, they wouldn't have won this battle. And the people know this. Jonathan was the one that did what God wanted him to do, and Saul obviously did not. And so obviously we want to be like Jonathan, but we might not always seek God's counsel just like Saul, right? Instead of asking him what to do, we might just wait on something to happen and then just quickly react without asking him any questions. Or we might just decide what we think is right and then just rush into it without ever asking him what he thinks about it. Proverbs 13:15-16 says, "Good understanding gains favor, but the way of the faithful is hard. Every prudent man acts with knowledge, but a fool lays open his folly. And so if we're faithful and we're listening to God, then we're going to act in the right way. But if not, then we're just a bunch of fools. And so we can obviously act in without thinking. We can also speak without thinking, right? We can do the same thing as Saul. We can say things that we didn't really think through. And then afterwards, we realize that was a dumb thing to say, or, you know, that was a way too harsh punishment. And now we're like, now what do we do? Proverbs 29:20 says, "Do you see a man hasty in his words? There's more hope for a fool than for him." So we've got to practice that. We've got to practice thinking about what we say before we say it so that we don't get ourselves into a mess and put other people in bad positions, right? And so these are all the ways that we can be impulsive like Saul. But even if we are asking God what he wants for us to do, we can still not be doing exactly what he wants us to do, right? Because we can be like him in the way of being passive. We can be like, oh, I think I'm doing the exact right thing by just, I'm not going to move from this spot until God tells me for certain. You know, I want to make sure that I am doing exactly what God wants for me to do. And so I'm just going to keep praying until I have no question in my mind. And God is like, no, I don't want to beat you over the head with it. I just want you to go. Sometimes he just wants us to do like Jonathan, set out in the direction that we think God is leading us, and then pay attention to the signs that he is sending us along the way. Let God guide you every single step of the way. Don't just decide what he wants you to do and go, but say, okay, God, I think this is what you want me to do. And so I'm going to set out to do this thing. I'm going to make myself ready to do this thing. And I'm going to head in that direction. And then I'm going to pay attention to you. And I'm going to wait for the opportunity that you give for me. You know, if you give me the opportunity to do this, I'm going to do it. But I'm going to set out in that direction. And I'm going to be looking for that opportunity. And if you don't give it to me, I'll accept that too. But I've just got to, you know, get out there and, you know, do something, because God doesn't always just want us to sit there and wait. He doesn't need us to sit there and wait. God can lead us as we're going, right? He doesn't need us to just be sitting around passively all of the time. There's times I'm sure that that is needed, but sometimes we've just got to say, I think this is what you want me to do, and I'm going to start out, and I'm going to pay attention, and I'm going to do what you tell me. Sometimes it's better, honestly, if we aren't just absolutely certain, because sometimes when we're absolutely certain, we just quit listening to God. It's like, all right, I think I've already got the answer, right? So why am I even, you know, continuing to pay attention to him? And God's like, no, that is rushing in recklessly also. And so sometimes it's better to be, you know, fairly certain, but not so certain that we don't talk to him anymore. And then just watch and do what we think he is asking us to do. Isaiah 30:21 says, "Your ears shall hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. Whenever you turn to the right hand or whenever you turn to the left." And so we want God guiding us all the way, right? We don't want to just decide, okay, this is what God wants us to do, because we might miss the details or the twists and turns. And so we need to be listening to God all of the way. Now, another thing that we can learn from Jonathan is that he set out ready for whatever God was going to call him to do that day. And the only way that we can be ready for whatever God has for us, whatever good work he has for us, is to set aside our own desires and all of our sinful ways. Set those things aside so that we can focus on the things of God. 2 Timothy 2:21 says, "Those who cleanse themselves from the latter will be instruments for special purposes, made holy, useful to the master, and prepared to do any good work." So if we'll set aside our own desires and our sinful ways, then we will be instruments for God's special purpose. We'll be holy, set apart, useful for him, prepared for all the good works that he has for us. And so Ask God what He wants you to do and what He wants you to say, and then act on what it is that you think He's telling you. And then with every step, look to Him for instruction. He will guide you and He will protect your way if you will trust in Him. Psalm 16, 7 to 8 says, I bless the Lord who gives me counsel. In the night also, my heart instructs me. I have set the Lord always before me. Because He is at my right hand, I will not be shaken. And then in Isaiah 50:10, it says, Who among you fears the Lord and obeys the voice of His servant? Let him who walks in darkness and has no light trust in the name of the Lord and rely on His God. God is the one that we need to depend on. Nothing else, no one else. No bright idea from us, no great amount of power from us, no displays of, dedication on our part are going to bring about the outcome that we desire, right? Only when we, like Jonathan, cooperate with God will He work through us and will we be truly successful in our endeavors. Psalm 33, 10 to 12 says, The Lord brings the counsel of the nations to nothing. He frustrates the plans of the people. The counsel of the Lord stands forever, the plans of His heart to all generations. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people whom He has chosen as His heritage. So, God brings our ways to nothing. He frustrates our plans. So, why even make them, right? Don't even make plans on your own. God's not going to let them succeed. His counsel is what stands forever. The plans of God's heart is what will last. And so we will be blessed if we have chosen to follow Him. That is how we will, our way will be blessed. Jeremiah 10:23-24 says, I know, O Lord, that the way of man is not in himself, that it is not in man who walks to direct his steps. Correct me, O Lord, but in justice. Not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. I love this verse because it's so genuine. He's like, God, I know that my ways are not good. And I know that your ways are the best. And so I want you to direct my paths. And I want you to correct me if I get off of them. But be nice about it, please, because it will crush me if you're upset with me. I need you to tell me if I'm off of the track. But I need you to do it, in the gentlest way possible, because I won't be able to take it otherwise. And so this should be our prayer. God, correct me when I need it. Get me on the right path. I want to follow you. I know that I don't know what I'm doing. I know that you do, but please do it gently because we can't take it otherwise, right? And so looking back on these two men, we don't want to be passive and impulsive and reckless like Saul, right? We need to be like Jonathan and ask for God's direction and then listen to Him with every single step. Cooperate with Him and then He will work through you. Philippians 2:13 says, For it is God who works in you both to will and to do for His good pleasure. So cooperate with Him so that He can work in your heart and show you what He wants you to do and help you do it. So that is all we have for today. Next week, we're going to continue with the story of Saul. And so make sure that you subscribe so you don't miss that episode. Also, if you would like to have this study written down so that you can click on each one of these links and read the scriptures for yourself in whatever version you want to read it for, and see this as I've written it out, then you can go to livethroughjesus.substack.com and you can become a paid subscriber there. This is the only paid stuff that I have, but it allows you to read through these things, like I said, on your own, in your own time, study as much as you want to. It also gives the opportunity, if you want to do these studies with a Bible study group, when you go to that website, every one of these studies have their own drop-down menu. So you can go to that drop-down menu of Saul, and you can see all of the lessons that we've had so far. With your subscription of $6 a month or $60 a year, you can also get access to all of the rest of the lessons, which start with the Ten Commandments and then go through Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, and Samuel. And so this is a very cheap way to do Bible studies with a group because you can just get one subscription and then print off all the material that you want. You can also go there and you can watch all of these lessons that I'm teaching on YouTube. You can go and watch those with the lesson that I've done. So, you know, if you go back to YouTube, you might not be able to find the Ten Commandments study. But if you go to the Substack, you can go straight to that tab of Ten Commandments, and then you can watch the videos, and those are for free. You do not have to become a paid subscriber for that. Also, if you want to become a free subscriber at Substack, then you can get the blog posts that I write with each one of these lessons. Those will be emailed to you every week, just like the lessons would be if you became a paid subscriber. And then you can read those blog posts and, you know, just learn from what I'm teaching, as opposed to actually going through the whole study. And also, if you want to listen to me teach those blog posts in the form of a devotion, then you can go to my separate YouTube or podcast channel that's called Live Through Jesus Weekly Devotions. And that's also free, and you can listen to those without having to read the blog post if you prefer to learn in that way. So lots of options for you to join me on our quest for studying the Bible. And then you can also join me on social media at Live Through Jesus on any of the social media platforms. And I will be posting scriptures from this lesson along with clips from what I'm teaching here. So that's all I have for today. I'll see you back next week. Thanks and have a good day.